I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Tom Oldson, the first average poll of the goal of the podcast, and I'm joined today by the fluke goal of the podcast, Martin Riley. And finally, I'm joined by the other average goal of the podcast, it's Dan Holdsworth. Dan, how are you?
Average. Below average, actually, good. After Friday.
Yeah. Wasn't great, was it?
No. I've been cricket coaching tonight, and I've had a really nice dinner, so that helps. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anything's better than that, isn't it? Like you could have said, "Oh, I just sat in a room on my own all day, staring at a wall, and it was better."
Yeah. I mowed the lawn. It was better.
What about you, Martin? Are you average as well?
Yeah, that's a pretty good summation of it, to be honest. Calmed down a bit over the weekend, I think, but still quite annoyed by the result. And I also haven't eaten yet, so I'm also hungry. So it's not a great combination. So could be quite doomy with this one.
I think it was doomy anyway, wasn't it? Regardless. I mean, to make matters worse, I actually went to the game. So I went all the way to London, watched the first half an hour of the game, and then I was like, they're not going to score a goal before half time. And I went down and had a pint, came back up, watched another half an hour of the game. And then my brother turned to me and said, when Pirro had his free kick, he was like, if Pirro skies this over the bar, we're going. And lo and behold, ball's in the stand and we're walking out of Loftus Road, and then we just hear celebrations of 4-0 from the QPR fans. It's actually the first time today that I saw the fourth goal of a QPR. It's because I didn't see it live on Friday. But then I had a lovely chat with some Leeds fans in the pub afterwards for about 4 hours, so that was great. And I had a lovely kebab afterwards. So I had a lovely trip to London apart from 8 till 10 o'clock. Apart from the football, I had a lovely time. I had a lovely breakfast on Saturday morning.
Leeds United spoiling weekend since 1919.
I mean, the one benefit of Friday games is you do get the whole of Saturday and Sunday to not get annoyed by Leeds. Well, you're already a little annoyed, but they don't ruin the day. They've already ruined the day before, so every cloud. Obviously we're here to review the 4-0 loss to QPR. The recent news, if any, is that it is going down to the last game of the season because Ipswich drew 3-3 with Hull on Saturday, which I watched and was actually a really enjoyable game. I was really, really enjoyed watching it despite needing Hull to win or draw, really. But yeah, we've all got that to look forward to at 12:30 on Saturday. So apart from that, is there any other news anyone can think of?
Don't think so.
Cool. Let's get into the game then. So as always, we will start with the game summary and strap yourselves in, there's a lot to talk about in this one. Leeds approached the game in their usual 4-2-3-1 shape, with QPR matching us in a 4-2-3-1 shape of their own. Leeds allowed two preventable goals in the first half, and followed that up with two preventable goals in the second half. And that was the end of the game. So, sorry for the long-winded game story, there was a lot to get in there. Let's get on to the interrogation then. So, I think what I quite like to do with these reviews, with particularly bad losses, is just kind of let you sort of vent for a bit, and then we get into what details that there are, if any, to talk about. So, Martin, kick us off. Now the dust has settled, just what are your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, so I was quite very frustrated after the game and the following day. And as the time went on, I've got less frustrated. And after watching it back, I was even less frustrated, if that makes sense. But it was definitely a poor performance, and it started off badly, and it kind of picked up a little bit, but then we weren't able to get any goals, so it just kind of descended then. And after that third goal went in, all desire had gone to the players, and you can see there nothing else was going to happen but a fourth goal for QPR. So yeah, it's a very, very bad loss in the situation that we're in at the moment, and it's just really saps life out of you when it's so close to the end of the season where we want to be. And unfortunately, the misery has been extended further with Ipswich not getting the goal that they needed to win the game against Hull. So yeah, so we're going down to the final game of the season, which is what a lot of people were saying it was going to be when the fixtures were released at the start of the season. Well, it's going to come down to us in Southampton on the final day, isn't it? And yeah, it is going to come down to us in Southampton on the final day. So yeah, nice self-fulfilling prophecy there, which we all expected, because it wouldn't be the Leeds way to do things any other way, really. But yeah, that's probably my summation of it, just disappointment, which is what Leeds filled me with for a long time.
I think when people thought it was coming down to Leeds-Southampton, they had a different thought of what it would mean, rather than who's coming for... Well, it's not even for who third and fourth, is it? It's for my Leeds... Nick second place from Ipswich. But yeah, what about yourself, Dan?
This is something I thought, I've been watching the game back tonight in prep for this podcast, kind of very reminiscent of some of the poorer performances that we saw early in the season, particularly midweek, when we're going to get into that later, but kind of smelt a bit like Stoke away and, you know, that kind of thing, just a bit lackluster, a bit not a lot going on. And QPR were kind of clinical and, you know, really on it to put the four past us. But in terms of like levels, it wasn't like horrendously appalling. It was of a similar level to Sunderland away, QPR away, West Brom away, that kind of thing. It's just that QPR really put us to the sword. Massive frustration that like Farke just rolled into this game and it's just kind of, it's plug and play, isn't it? He's just said, right, we're going to do our usual thing. Off you go, lads. And not realising that, you know, sometimes there's a live opponent, you know, and we didn't seem to do anything to adapt to what was a very live opponent. And it's just... You know, what were the adaptations did Fart make mid-game, other than swapping a few players out? None. And it's that kind of constant refrain. And it's just frustration that like a dummy like me can see that stuff needs to be changed. Why can't Fart? I mean, maybe he can, maybe he's not, you know. But that's the feeling, isn't it? It's just right, like kind of helpless frustration.
Yeah, that's the same for me. It's like I was just frustrated that we didn't really get anything going at all. Like even... So, and like, I'm not comparing to Bielsa on purpose, but like under Bielsa, you always felt like even in a bad game, you'd fancy us to sort of maybe nick a result out or something just from like from the way we play. But if a team comes and plays intensely, if they sort of tactically outmaneuver us, then you just don't. You think in these sort of games that we're never going to get anything going unless someone like Somerville does it for us, which is really, really frustrating. So yeah, it's just really annoying, especially at the time of the season. Like you can almost take those start of the season as we did, middle of the season, but what, two games to go when every point seems to matter more, then it is definitely more frustrating.
It's kind of confusing, isn't it, how the heads went so quick? Because obviously we've had some bad form since international break, but there was so much promise in that Middlesbrough performance, wasn't there? I mean, not since perfect, but there was a lot of promise and we saw a lot of the good stuff we saw in the 2024 pre-international break period, the good period. And you know, you kind of hope as a fan, don't you, that you're starting to see something. But I guess it's all very, you know, form's fragile, isn't it? Performance levels are fragile. And we saw that, didn't we, in this game. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was almost like the Middlesbrough game hadn't happened, and it was like the continuity. We basically just rolled from the Blackburn game in. Like, it didn't even feel like, oh, they've started fast and then QPR have come at us, made us feel like, oh, actually, we're not playing that well. Like, it didn't seem to be there from the off. So, bit of a weird one, really. Like, completely found it a bit odd, I've got to say, as well.
It feels like one of those games that if we could have held on for half an hour without conceding, it might have been QPR might have run out of steam a bit and we might come into it. But we just didn't seem all that very compact, did we, and able to kind of shut QPR down. You know, we weren't able to turn it into a nothing game. You know, when sometimes things aren't going your way, sometimes it doesn't quite click. Okay, go back into your, you know, go into a low block, shut the game down for a while, get yourself together again. That kind of didn't seem to happen, did it, somehow? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I watched the North London derby yesterday, and like we're nowhere near as good as Arsenal, but like Arsenal didn't play that well at the start, but like they kind of just stuck to what they knew defensively, and it kind of saw them through, and they were able to create chances. And then,
relatively,
we should have been able to do the same compared to QPR. Like, so, but yeah, there was just absolutely none of that whatsoever.
Going back to the Borough game, it was a bit of a manic game. Second half, we went to a low block and played a pretty good kind of medium low block, whatever it was, didn't we, against second half? It was pretty effective. You know, we got undone by a freak long range goal, really. You know, a great header. Like, if things aren't going well, go back to basics. You know, get a low block right and build from there. And that'd have been probably a more fruitful approach than the one we had.
I'm struggling to tell what the approach really was at the start of the game. Let's talk about that start of the game then. So Daniel Farke said afterwards that the game was determined in that opening 15 minutes, that we weren't aggressive enough and won no duels in that time, and that was with or without the ball. So, Martin, what do you make of Farke's comments?
Together, after I saw his post-match interview, I made sure to pay specific attention to that opening 15 minutes and what was going on both in and out of possession. And just firstly, I noticed a lot of problems with the forward part of the press, and that it wasn't connected well to the midfield part of the press. So you would find that Groove was often leaving Paul back with lots of space, and when Nonto would move forward to press Clark Salter, there was usually a pass on to Paul back because Groove wasn't tight enough to him, and he would then pass sideways to Paul at left back, and he was then able to carry forward into lots of space. And that specific move happened, I counted, I think, four times in the first half. I'll have that move or some slight variation of that move. So that was one route which they had, which to get by our press straight away. Additionally, I felt that Groove was out of position often, leaving too much space on the left while Chair was able to drop into and drive forward, which is how the first goal came about, right? But they were intentionally pulling play to the right side to try to draw us over. And often their attacking midfielder, Willock, I think, would pull right, which left space. And because I think Groove was attracted to where Willock was moving to, and so that left space for Chair to drop into the central spaces, and that's the certain space that he drove into. Groove was too far, pulled over, and he tried to compensate and did a reasonably good job to try to catch up to him, but he was out of position in the first place because he was drawn over to the right side, which he could have been more aware of. And this was happening quite often. Neither Byram or Groove were able to stop Chair from being so influential in this game, because I was led to believe that Chair wouldn't be influential at Elland Road.
He was at Elland Road.
That's what I wrote down, but I was not wrong. But yeah, so he wasn't influential at Elland Road then, so he wasn't going to be influential here. We'll say who that was.
I have been on this podcast long enough now that we know that most of the time I don't know what I'm talking about, okay? That's not a shock to anyone that has listened for a long time.
It's true. We do love you, though. So I'm not really sure.
That's why I host now, so I don't have to actually talk.
That's true. So really, I'm not sure what our press intentions were, whether we were trying to enact a high press and the midfield weren't doing their job right, whether that was they didn't have the energy level to match it up, whether they weren't switched on enough to notice the movements of Chair. And so it was just all felt very disconnected. And you had individuals who were pressing forward quite seemingly, sometimes at random. I think Nonto was guilty of that a few times, of committing forward and not paying attention to the amount of space which Powell had. And that was quite often. It wasn't for lack of effort on Nonto's part. He was putting out a lot of work rate in the game, but he wasn't always the most intelligent at presses that he was doing, and it was easy to get around them. So I think probably what the better tactic for this game would have been would be similar to what we did against Middlesbrough away. I think possibly Farke underestimated QPR a bit in their patterns, because I don't want to put this all down to our press being bad, like it was in the opening 15 minutes. But QPR were also very good for their movements. They didn't impress me a lot, I felt. And having nice combinations. And it was like these nice little triangles which they had going between callback in the middle, Chair linking up with Powell, especially on the left-hand side. That was really well coordinated. And it was kind of reminiscent of what we used to do under Bielsa a lot with what I was watching. I paid attention to a few of the triangles quite often, and it was really good stuff. So I do think that Farke underestimated what QPR were capable of doing. And if maybe he had shown him a bit more respect and dropped back a little bit more, then they may have found having less space more difficult to generate these good attacks through. So yeah, it's a few things wrong with both the individuals in the press not doing what they should do, and also from the manager not getting the setup right to start with, in my opinion.
Dan, what did you make of the out-of-possession approach? So, was it QPR that did well or Leeds did badly or both?
Well, both. I mean, Martin has described the situation with the front four going after QPR quite a lot, and being a bit like headless chickens. Like you saw Nonto charging onto like Parle, the right back, and then over to Clark Salter, the right centre back, and him being bypassed. You'd have Archie Gray kind of pushing up like on the front line almost as well, and you'd be left with Grove trying to cover Anderson and trying to get across the chair, and then and the back four backpedaling. It was just like acres and acres of space so often. I've got like a comment here: 5 minutes. Bullock ran through Grove because Grove was isolated on his own, and just couldn't do anything about it. I mean, Fark is kind of right in that we didn't, I mean, I don't know about winning no duels, but we did seem to be coming second best in more of our duels in that first 15 minutes. QPR certainly were more the aggressive, the more successful in those one-on-one situations. That's fine. Sometimes that happens when you're away from home and, you've got a fast turnaround, that kind of stuff. But we didn't help ourselves by just being gung-ho and, played like an inexperienced team, trying to chase down an older team of older players who knew what they were doing and knew how to sort of old manners basically and take, pick the pass out. So it was almost like we attacked their 4-2-3-1 with a 4-2-4. Our front four just charged into their back four, got bypassed really easily because the press wasn't very well coordinated and it had Perreault in it. And then once you bypass that front four, you've got Archie Gray and Grove in no man's land and a back four backpedaling. That's just a recipe for disaster, particularly with the three behind the striker QPR have got. Like, they've got Chair, Anderson, who had a good game, and Willock. They're real good players at this level, really good players. And they combined and flowed, and they swapped positions a lot. I mean, I was never certain if it was Anderson on the right or Willock on the right or Willock at 10, Anderson at 10. They rotated a lot and picked up great positions and, it looked like good players, all three of them. But I'm sure our tactical setup made them look like good players more than they are, if that makes sense, by giving them so much space. And I'm just like super frustrated. Like, so in the lead up to the goal, it was a free kick just inside their half. We had a front four quite close to the free kick taker. So that's Grove, Perreault, Rutter, Perreault, Nonton, Somerville, quite close and quite compact, just across the halfway line. And then the ball got played back to Clark Salter, I think it was, and Nonto just head after him. And the others didn't. And then Clark Salter just played the ball straight through to Chair, almost like a straight long ball, straight through to Chair, who was kind of just running on the inside of, and pretty much bypassed our front four and probably bypassed Gray as well. And it was just such a simple thing. I had Nonto have some discipline and just dropped in alongside Gray, like a right midfield, would have blocked the path. And QPR would have had to pass it around square. So it was just a lack of discipline or a lack of thinking, hang on a minute, let's just get into a compact shape now and again and just hold them off. So, yeah, bad pressing, uncoordinated, not lacking effort, but lacking brains, basically, is the way I saw it.
It is disappointing that the press was so bad, considering like we've seen games this year, like thinking like Leicester away, where the press not was good and was smart. Like, it wasn't just that the players press well. And this, it didn't feel like we... I don't know, Pirro was in that press at Leicester as well. So like, he can do it. The team can do it, but it was almost like Martin said that he just didn't appreciate what QPR could do to an extent, or the players didn't.
I think at Leicester though, Pirro didn't lead the press, did he? Pirro sat on Winks.
Yeah.
And Rutter led the press. And here we're asking Pirro to lead the press, and I just don't think that ever works.
Pirro, who can't play nine, but
no.
Was playing
nine. I hold my hands up. I like Perreault. I think Perreault's a good player. We've got to work out a way of getting the best out of him. He's good. He's got some good attributes. But do not have him leading the press. Just don't ever do it. Zero. It's a rule. It should be a hard and fast rule. Perreault should never lead the press. He should drop in and sit on the deep midfielder, whoever that is, as best he can, or block a passing lane. He should think of himself as a blocking player. And Rutter, who can press, should go after the centre-backs, if we need to go after them. I mean, generally, Leeds' better pressing performances have come with kind of aggressive mid-blocks, haven't they, where we've kind of drawn them out and then hit them a little bit further out. I don't know if we're kind of good enough to go after teams with a really, really high press, particularly when you've got Perreault in the team, particularly when you've got Byram in the team and Gruev, who aren't athletically particularly outstanding, which I think is another factor. We had Byram, who had a shocker. Their forward line had the legs on Byram, didn't they? So all of a sudden we've got this really crazy open game where we're getting played through, and then Byron's defending acres of space, Grove's defending acres of space. It's hard, isn't it, for them?
I think the other thing that was touched on there, which was kind of my main takeaway when I was at the game, was sort of how much space Grove and Archie Gray were having to cover. And yeah, well, watching it back, it was kind of, they were being left isolated, but I don't think they were there was no blame to be laid on them either. So when I was looking through the listener questions today, I think the most questions were on Gray and Gruev, about just basically on the theme of their midfield. So Martin, I'll come back to you on this. Like, what did you make of them in this game? How they performed? Like, is there any of the blame of how the result turned out to be with them? I'd also like to know what you make of them recently, and why would Fark go with them in this game?
So yeah, it's an interesting one, especially about why Camara has kind of been shunted out of the first team altogether. He was a pretty integral part of our really good, solid run of form throughout this calendar year. And it just seems that since he's had that illness, whatever it is, that he's no longer part of the team anymore. I wonder if whatever illness it was that he had has kind of had some sort of effect on him fitness-wise, and maybe he's not at the same level as what he was before it. I don't want to throw out the big C word, but COVID is one of those things which, if it lasted, what the illness was, this mystery illness, that would be why he's not in the side. But that's besides the point, really. But yeah, on Archie and Groove, I felt, especially in the opening 15, 20 minutes, I think more Groove than Archie, because most of our problems were on the our right side, and Archie was the left-sided midfielder in it. So I thought, I don't think Archie did anything majorly wrong in the first half, but Groove, I did feel that he was out of position a few times, and although he was having to cover quite a bit of space, I also think that was another issue, was I don't think our climb was high enough, so it wasn't compressing the pitch. I'm not sure why it was as deep as where it was at points. It was quite deep, and I'm not sure if it was giving too much respect to Chair by holding it that deep, but it worked more in Chair's favour, because Chair isn't a last line attacker. He's one who will want to get the ball in the midfield area and drive forward. So having the back line deep is just going to play into his hands. So I don't know if that was intentional. It would be strange if it was intentional to have the back line as deep as it was at times.
Especially when you're pressing high as well. Like, it's just exactly.
I wonder if it was the worry about Byram or Rodon isn't fully fit. You know, there's a bit of a concern about covering space behind.
It could be, but I just don't think they have that many players who could really break through our back line.
They're not a quick team, are they?
Because Chair, although he's very good technically with the ball, I don't think he is the bestest player on the pitch. Yeah, he is faster than some of our back line, but I think Rodon is probably as fast as what he is. Rodon probably our best recovery centre back, and he's on that same side as what Chair is on. So if Chair was ever making runs beyond, which he doesn't do, because that's not his game, he's not that sort of winger. And it just wouldn't make much sense for me for that to be the plan. But it did seem like that was what we was doing, and which did make it very difficult for Groove to cover the space that was there. But you can't deny that he was beaten a few times individually by Chair and by Willer at the same time. So yeah, I do think there is some part of it of individual to blame, but more I'm more worried about the general shape in this game. And it's possible that we didn't have enough time to prepare for this game, but it just seemed that some parts of this press weren't our usual game anyway. Like, we don't normally have our climb that deep when we're pressing high and like we were in this game. So a lot of things just didn't really make sense, and it's potential that we didn't really have enough time to prepare. But I don't know. Overall, I'm just dying who talks about football. I don't know the insides and outs of what's been happening in training. But yeah, overall, I'm not too against Archie and Groove together. I thought they had a decent game against Borough, and I think as the game wore on, they did get better. They weren't quite as bad. The opening 15, 20 minutes was quite bad, but it could just be Gabe said, right? QPR sat back a little bit more, so which did leave them more space to play in. But I do think that as the game wore on, Barham especially did do a lot better at trying to press the ball and ended up a more aggressive player on pitch at the starts anyway. The opening 15, 20 minutes wasn't the case. He was pretty bad in that time. But as QPR sat back, he did have more space to play into, and he was able to find Rutera a few times, and he was able to get the ball to Nonto quite often. But yeah, overall, the midfield pair actually was fine, I think, but Groove not so much. But the tactical setup was worse.
I think I'd agree with most of that. I think my comment in the group chat on Friday about Groove was that he's a pathetic excuse for a footballer. So, and having watched the game back, I'd stand by that. On his performance alone on Friday. I don't, not generally, but he was on Friday. He really wound me up with his performance. Dan, what about you on this?
Yeah, broadly speaking, I'm happy with Groove and Archie as a pair. I think they can function, but they can't function like marking an ocean kind of thing. You know what I mean? They just don't make them do it. Archie's not necessarily the best at tracking runners as a defensive player. You know, he's young. He's new to the, you know, he's new to senior professional football. You know, he's good physically, but he doesn't always track his runners and get into good positions defensively. That'll come, I presume, as he gets more experienced. Griff generally picks up quite good positions. He's quite a good counter-presser. But we just ask them to do too much. I mean, this, just broadly speaking, this is one of my biggest gripes at Farke, that he goes with the two-man midfield no matter what. And I know in build-up, players drop in and make it free and stuff, but what about in defence? You know, in defensive situations, why not? You know, why not drop Nonto in there as a midfielder opera or whatever? And, you know, if they're getting swamped, and just change the shape. I don't know. I'm not massively looking at... I mean, I was annoyed with Grove for their second goal. He let the guy get shot away too easy, didn't he? Anderson, I think it was. So yes, Grove did have some bad moments, but I think it was the kind of the setup was there. They were set up to fail, weren't they, almost, those two? I mean, going forward, I probably would look at bringing Kamara in for the last game. Which I think is the next question. Sorry, I've jumped ahead there, but I probably would bring him in.
Yeah.
And perhaps I'd put Archie back at right back, because I think Byram's struggled a bit defensively recently and what have you. And Archie's probably physically more capable than Byram these days, getting up and down and that kind of stuff. And I think Archie and Nonto had quite a good combo building before they were moved. So for a couple of reasons, I would put Kamara back in. But as much as Kamara played well in that good spell, I think it's about getting Archie back to right back and getting Byram out, who I'm not enjoying right now.
Yeah, it's almost like... It's oversimplification, but I think like we played well with Grove and Kamara there and Gray at right back, and it's now not working as well. But like that's definitely obviously simplifying it down. But I agree, I would bring Kamara back in if he's fit. Like I hadn't thought what Martin said could be the case. But yeah, I would as well. What about you, Martin?
I've not really got too much else to add onto it, what I've already said. But yeah, that I probably would bring Kamara back in if he is fit enough to play, because it was our best run of the season where we had Kamara and Groove in midfield with Archie at right back. And unless there is a reason why Kamara is not being used at all, he wasn't even brought off the bench in this game. Unless there is a good reason for it, put Archie back at right back and get Kamara in midfield.
Let's discuss our play in possession then. So we created one big chance in this game, but that didn't arrive until the 66th minute. And I think the only big chance I can kind of remember in the first half was the Somerville volley. Was that in the first half, I think?
Yeah. Straight to the keeper.
Yeah, but that's like the biggest chance. Yeah, he did well with it. So, Dan, would you say was this down to Leeds' failings in possession, or did QPR set up well for this game?
Yeah, well, QPR did well to kind of harry and be aggressive, didn't they, and break the game up. Not in a kind of like horrible shithouse way. You know, they weren't breaking the game up that way, but they were just good at kind of disrupting our play and breaking the play that way. You know, it's kind of, it feels like a compact pitch, didn't it? And it felt like they kind of swarmed our play quite well and just disrupted it. So there's a few occasions where we were breaking. We had nice chances to break, and like Georgie played a pass to some of it that was just slightly on his heels, not quite right. A lot of that was going on, wasn't it? There was another time Nonto was breaking out and Somerville tried to take the ball off him, I think, on a break. Really annoying. Like, I don't know why he did that. Why didn't Somerville just hurdle him and keep going? You know, it just felt the timing and the combinations weren't quite right. And that, I wonder if that was just partly down to QPR kind of rattling them and, you know, putting them out of the, you know, pressing them well and putting them out of the kind of stride a bit. So yeah, nothing seemed to combine, but I don't know what the plan was to break QPR down either. Like what were we trying to do? I'm not sure. I mean, watching it back, there was just the occasional moment on the counter where we counter, and that's like we do anyway. And it never quite came off. Occasionally, some of them got pinned against the touchline and they put three guys on him, didn't they? Or Nonto. They were quite good at pinning us to the touchline, I think. QPR, and we didn't seem to kind of realise or have a plan for getting around that. So, yeah, in possession. I don't know what the plan was, but whatever it was, didn't work or we didn't see it.
Martin, what about you on this one?
So, yeah, the in possession stuff, I thought for QPR's approach, they were sitting off Roden quite often with the forward press, especially in the opening 15 to 20 minutes. And they also kept the midfield line quite tight, so there wasn't a lot of space between their players to find our attackers. So we did struggle with this in the opening 15 to 20 minutes. And there were times where we weren't brave enough to find our attackers in that. There were moments where I saw in those opening periods where the ball onto Georgie and Byram chose to go backwards instead, or just play a square ball to Nonto rather than looking for the incisive central pass. So I think there was a little bit lack of bravery in moments especially in the opening period of the game. And then after that, obviously, we did come out more when it went 2-0 up to QPR. So we did generally find it a bit easier to progress the ball after that point. But that is mainly due to the game state, I think, with QPR sat back a little bit more. They weren't full low block. They were sort of more of an aggressive mid block rather than the higher press which they had in the opening parts of the game. But I did feel we did get into a number of good positions in the first half. I guess the chance was one which was mentioned there, which Somerville had the volley which Nonto crossed the ball to him, and Begovic saved that well, I felt. That was one good moment, and there was the shot from from Perreault, which I can see why he shot in that circumstance, but at that point Firpo was overlapped him as well, and he probably could have chosen that option and we could have got a pull back in from Firpo on the overlap, and that would generate a better chance. So there were definitely some issues with choosing the wrong option, although I do understand why Perreault shot from there, because he's a quote unquote striker, attacker, whatever you want to call him, so he's going to shoot when he's in that position. But yeah, there's just a few moments like that which we went, and I don't think we was awful in possession, and there were some bad decisions made. That opening 15 to 20 minutes really did cause us problems, and after those two goals I think that really didn't help things, of course. Overall I think I felt QPR did do a reasonably good job out of possession, and maybe we could have made the right choice in some individual moments, and we could probably have got a goal in the first half, I think.
Yeah, my kind of takeaway was that I think game state kind of played into us getting back into the first half. I think that first 20 minutes especially, we couldn't get anything going. I think a bit, I would agree as well that I think a bit of it is down to sort of poor individual decisions in that, in some moments. But yeah, I agree with Dan, like I don't really know what the idea was to get something attacking wise out of this game, but you could perhaps argue that for a lot of the games since the international break that there doesn't seem to be an idea about outside of giving it to individuals and letting them do it. So maybe that's just finally, well, it's caught up us on other games, but maybe this one in particular it's caught us up. So like you said, Matt, I think QPR did a good job out of possession, especially in those first 15 minutes, and which meant that we did struggle to play even like towards our normal attacking standards in this one.
Yeah, I was just looking at the stats in terms of passes. We did actually get the ball into the final third a reasonable amount. I mean, 45 times we passed the ball into the final third compared to 11 versus Middlesbrough. So I guess that's game state. Game state is a big part of that. But, you know, so we were getting the ball into decent positions, broadly speaking. Completed passes into the penalty area is a bit low, actually, but not mega low. So, yeah, it was kind of standard in that respect. We were progressing the ball reasonably well into dangerous parts of the pitch. But, yeah, I guess it didn't really lead to any big, well, just the one big chance or two big chances, whatever it was. So
that brings an end to the first half of the pod then. I will just point out at this point that Leicester are winning, and as it stands, they are about to win the title, so good for them. I hope they have a lovely time. Before we move on to the second half of the analysis, I think we'll go for a quick ad break, but before that happens, I will plug the Patreon. Don't worry, patrons, you don't need to listen to this part. Our patrons get access for as little as £1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts, and if you want to pay a little bit more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, such as the one you are listening to now, and are likely to get again before the end of the season. You also will get analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts. If you want to find out more about our Patreon, then where do they need to go, Martin?
Patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Let's move on to the second half of the analysis then. So normally at this point, we obviously sort of dig into individual performances a bit more, but it kind of feels that after this one, that it's a bit fruitless to sort of dig into those individual performances and dig them out to an extent. Because it felt more like a collective failing, in this section we'll primarily discuss what this means for Leeds going forward, rather than going, oh, he was bad, he was bad, he was bad. You all know who was bad in that game. So, Martin, this was a pretty comprehensive loss, and our worst performance as a team for probably since that sort of August, September time, you've got to say. But maybe relative with the players available, one of our worst in a while. When you consider the team individually, the team, and it's like a much higher level than QPR's, do you put the performance down to Marty Cifuentes doing his job really well? Or do you think this lays at Farkstall?
I think it's definitely a combination of the two. I do think that Cifuentes got his did his job perfectly and set up his team well to combat our threat. He probably knew that if we came to press them, that there would be space to attack, and he knew what areas to put the ball into. He clearly identified our right side as a area to get at, and there was a physical mismatch between Kerr and Byram, which we saw very early in the game. And so he definitely got that part of it right. And I think Farker also got things wrong with, I'm not sure if it was the intention to do this weird non-high press with a deep line thing, whatever it was. So yeah, I do think it is definitely a bit of both. And I would say that I think Fuentes did a really good job on this one, more than anything. There is definitely some things to lay in fact, though. Like, I do not know how, for the life of me, Joel Perreault stayed on the pitch the entire game. What? He's not one of the individuals who's going to suddenly pull something out of nothing for us. I mean, yeah, he's got a good shot on him, but so far we haven't seen that too often throughout his time with us. And he's clearly maybe not at his best confidence-wise. And you've got him taking off two of our best individual moments attackers in Routier and Somerville, taking them both off in the same minute, while leaving Perreault on to lumber about the pitch and not really doing a whole lot. So, yeah, as much as I don't hate Perreault, I think he's a good player, but I don't see why he was left on the pitch for as long as what he was. And it felt more to me that a different change could have worked better. Taking Perreault off for, say, Camara, and having Camara in midfield helps us get a bit more control and get the ball progressing down both sides of the pitch. Would have been good, because then we would have had Archie on one side and Camara on the other side. That could have left more things, but instead he just went with what he always does when we're losing. Just throw on every attacker that he's got and hope for the best. I mean, I think Perreault was playing in midfield when those changes happened, so he was playing as a midfielder, which is just bizarre. It's truly, truly bizarre. So I do think there's definitely some things that you can lay on Farke for this game. But also, Cifuentes did do his job perfectly, I think.
Maybe Pirro fits better into the 3-1 fuck it formation than Somerville and Nonto do.
Potentially.
Dan, what are your thoughts on this one?
I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Cifuentes. I think the QPR were set up very well. They're obviously well coached, well drilled. They all had, you know, there's a lot of obviously understanding between their players, and they, you know, it seemed to click very well. The press was pretty good. So yeah, they looked to be like, you know, a well drilled team, but I don't think they did anything particularly out there or different, did they? I didn't watch QPR and thinking, oh, we've seen something new here. We just saw a well drilled, hard working team. So I would say that then perhaps you're looking at Daniel Farke, and he's just it's almost like he's turned up and he's not bothered to work out a tactical plan for this game. He's just prepared them to do what they normally do and sent them out without any thought, to the opposition, any thought to, you know, QPR's weaknesses, QPR's strengths. It just felt like we'd not given them any respect at all. That's what it felt like to me. And, you know, I've got the result we deserve, really, from that perspective. Like Martin said, Perreault should never, ever lead the press. Perreault is a second striker or a 10. That's it. So, and he's a good player. You know, we saw some good performances from him in the first half of the season when Rutter was leading the line and he was playing the second striker. It worked fairly well, in, you know, not all the time, but fairly well for a good number of games. So if Bamford isn't fit, then you either go back to the lineup we had at the start of the season, the first half, with Perreault and Rutter as the forward line, and Rutter being the press leader, or you pick Joseph, who can lead a press. You don't put Perreault to lead a press. It's absolutely crazy. Don't ask Perreault to do what Bamford does. Ask Joseph to do what Bamford does, or perhaps ask Rutter to do it, you know, in terms of stretching and pressing. I think Farke was either lazy or careless or stupid in the way he approached this game. And yeah, it's on him, basically. I'm a bit angry with Farke. I mean, I've generally defended Farke because I think, broadly speaking, he's done an okay job this year, a decent enough job. But that was on him.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think when a team, like we said in the attacking side, that when a team doesn't look like they know how they're going to break down a team, and when the whole press of the team is misfunctioning, then that's very rarely on all individuals, and it's usually on the manager, and it definitely was in this one. My kind of frustration is like there's a lot of things that you can lay at Farke that aren't isolated incidents over the season. And obviously, yeah, he's done a great job. Like, he's dealt with the summer we had last year well, and like 90 points wins you the league in most seasons. But there's a lot of stuff he does that's very frustrating, and it all kind of boiled up in this game. So, and like, I would definitely agree that, yes, if Fuentes has done a good job at QPR and they were organised on Friday, but they weren't special. So, yeah, I think Farke being really annoyed at Farke was probably my main takeaway from Friday night. I was kind of half tempted to ask a question about Farke as a wider, but I think I'm not going to ask that. I will leave that till the summer, depending on the outcome of the season. So we'll leave that for now. You can all look forward to that at a later point. There's been something of a theme in which we struggle to perform when we've played away from home. The game before with only minimal rest. So the below tweet from QPR Analytics on Twitter sums this up well. So I think this was before the game that Leeds, their away points per game, 1.68. Away points per game after 3 or 4 days of rest is 1.25. And away points per game after 3 or 4 days of rest plus the previous game being away is 0.8. So obviously that led to us not getting anything on Friday. But not the top 20 guys actually touched on this. I think it was one of their recent betting pods where they picked a team that was at home because another team had played away and played away 3 or 4 days before that. But they were. It's research done by at TWFootball1867 and Thomas Peters, who was actually our Sheffield Wednesday guest earlier in the season. These guys did that, and they did a whole analysis on not just Leeds but other teams that looked into how teams deal with back-to-back aways, the amount of if a team has more rest, if a team has little rest, and just sort of combinations of from that sort of theme. And the long story short is, as you can expect, teams that do back-to-back aways with no rest or less rest than their opponents do not do well. So it's not just a Leeds thing, but it's still an issue that's that reared itself. So Martin, what do you make of all that I've just thrown at you?
Yeah, it definitely does tally up. And I've actually looked into the games for us and got them all in front of me here. So these are all games in which we've had minimal rest. So starting off, first match was Hull away, followed by Millwall away, and that ended in a draw. And that was with 3 days rest. Then we had Stoke away, which was followed by Norwich away, which ended in a loss with 3 days rest. Then Sunderland away, followed by Blackburn away, was a loss and only 3 days rest again. Then Preston away, followed by Ipswich away. So Ipswich at home even. So this is a slight variation. I'll include this anyway because it was only 3 days rest again. And that also ended in a loss.
Well, I think Preston, we had Ipswich at home, didn't we? Then we had Preston Tuesday away. Then
I think
West
you've got
Brom.
Those the wrong way around. Yeah, but yes. Yeah, I think that's what
yeah. Yeah. You are
yeah,
right, yeah.
I get what you and mean. Then, yeah, yeah.
And then West Brom away. So we jumped in. So it was like Preston away on the Tuesday lost, then West Brom away on the Friday and lost. That was obviously the Christmas period, having beeps, which at home not long before. So it was the double away game. We lost two. And then early in the season, it was like Sunderland away followed. Where is it? I've lost it now. Sunderland. So we played Blackburn on a Saturday at home, and then we travelled to Sunderland on a Tuesday and lost.
Yeah, basically all the things that I was saying before, they were in reverse order. I just wrote them down reverse somehow. But yeah, so there's definitely a theme where we've had 3 days rest following fixtures and been away followed by away where we have lost or drawn. There were some a bit other times where like the I think it was Swansea away followed Rotherham at home only 3 days rest and we won that one, other than fixture reports. And then there was Plymouth away, which was following Swansea away, so those were back to back really, and 4 days rest on that one and we won that one. So there were some which we have won, but there's also quite a lot which we have lost, and especially some of the more recent ones in which we lost against Blackburn and we've recently lost against QPR. And so that's two that's back. So yeah, the data is there that teams that also in particular have done quite badly when we have had minimal rest following away, then away fixtures. And you can understand why. Obviously, there's a lot of travelling involved and not a lot of time to rest and it's not a lot of time to plan in between fixtures. And I think us especially, we may have had more of these sort of instances than a lot of other teams. We've played a lot of games on Fridays, a lot of games on Mondays. So I think we probably have more of these than some other teams do. I'm not saying that with certainty. I haven't looked at every other team in the league to say that definitively. Yes, I'm lazy. But yeah, it's definitely a thing that has happened. And like Aldo mentioned, they'd looked at it and not the top 20. And it's not just Leeds who are affected by that. It's all teams who are affected when there's minimal rest in between two away fixtures consecutively. So I definitely think that is something to take into account and that we have been a victim of this. We, like Farker said, we weren't as aggressive as we needed to be, but I also do think that there were bigger issues with this game than just the aggressiveness of our press and maybe the energy levels not quite matching up. QPR did have a little bit more rest in between. I think they had 6 days left. We had just 4. So, yeah, there's something in it, but it doesn't excuse us of all blame in this one because there were definitely still some failings which we could have addressed with even the minimal time that we've had to prepare between fixtures.
See, this is what frustrates me about Farke. I mean, this is definitely a thing, and I think it's something we commented on early in the season when we were struggling away from home midweek at Stoke and Sunderland, etc. It's definitely something we noticed, that the performances midweek away weren't great. Farke doesn't seem to... I think it's probably like a lack of prep time is the impact. I mean, obviously physical rest is a factor as well and players being fresh, but like a lack of prep time. Now, why don't we have like a system that can fall back on, like a low block system or something that we can fall back on that isn't quite as physically demanding, that can get us through games? And, you know, why if we're tired, do we have to play the same way? Isn't there like a plan B? You know, Farke is a pragmatist manager, apparently. So why do we not have a kind of a low-block plan B system? You know, we do sometimes. We did against Borough in the second half, didn't we? Why was that not deployed here when I'm sure they must have had the data and they must have known that the guys were going to be tired? The guys probably hadn't trained full pelt all week, that kind of thing. So I don't know. It just feels like there was a lack of adjustment to our approach, bearing in mind these facts are there, with these facts being known, which that's the frustrating thing.
Yeah, you'd think that Farke from... an experienced championship manager, not to sound like a guy down the pub, but like you think he would be aware of these sort of things from many seasons of the championship and how to sort of deal with them. So yeah, I think that's another disappointing thing for me. I think it kind of reared his head more in this game, is that we effectively was the turnaround of games effectively meant that we'd played a midweek before a Saturday or a Sunday, whereas like QPR had had a week off. So through no fault of our own, we'd basically we're on a midweek schedule rather than a full week schedule. But yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, Dan, about sort of having a fallback option with a low block. Like, why could you not start with a low block and then it sort of, yeah, see the game through and then try and sort of impose yourself on the game in the second half rather than impose yourself in the first half and then go into the low block? Like, surely with the fitness levels, that would be easier.
Use your bench. We've got a strong bench as a rule, haven't we? Go after them with a fresh bench. Second half.
Yeah. So perhaps this is something we might keep an eye on next season, depending on how it all goes. Right, so let's ignore Ipswich for now, because we don't know the result, but the listeners might, depending on when they are listening to this. But do we have a problem that we may actually just, regardless of what Ipswich do, we might struggle to beat Southampton on Saturday, however they turn up? And that if we are in the playoffs, that we might just not be able to beat any of them, either with the way that we're playing at the moment. So, Dan, I'll come to you first on this.
I mean, it's a worry, isn't it? Because performance levels have been pretty poor generally. But the only thing that gives me comfort is that the performance level of the top six all around is a bit bad, isn't it? Southampton are probably in worse form than we are.
Yeah, somehow. It's like it's just two idiots fighting on Saturday. Like.
Yeah, it's the two skinny kids having a fight at school, isn't it? Yeah. Like the two nerds, you know, in the playground, and they can't hurt each other because they're too weak. Like, so it might be a crap game Saturday against Southampton, might it? We should be able to beat Southampton. In theory, we should be a good matchup for them. They should be the sort of team that play into our hands and play into our, you know, what we're good at. But that didn't prove to be the case down there, did it? At St Mary's, they gave us a bit of a tanking, didn't they? So one of the few higher placed teams that have given us a kick in this year, Southampton. So I guess there's an element of maybe there's something about their setup that we're going to struggle with, which we'll maybe try and cover in the preview. So, but in theory, we should be able to beat Southampton. based on what we've seen this season, we should be able to beat Norwich. We should be able to beat Hull. The only team that we've consistently struggled with is West Brom, and they're not in great form at the moment. And I don't think they've got an amazing squad. So in theory, if we can get our tactics right, we should have enough for West Brom as well. So it's all great saying that in theory, but like we just look fragile at the moment, don't we? Defensively not strong anymore. Melier's playing bad, and that's not going to help. That's going to, you know, give the defence lack of confidence. We're not necessarily putting chances away. And I think we've been a little bit a victim of variance, haven't we? We've seen like a lot of goals conceded for not a lot of XG, but still, it's going to hit your confidence, isn't it? So, yeah, even if Ipswich lose tomorrow night, fingers crossed, it doesn't mean anything if that's the performance level, does it?
Yeah, that's more as what I try to get. It's like, I think everyone's kind of going, oh, well, if Ipswich lose tomorrow, then if we beat Southampton, then we're up. But like, I think I would have more issues with beating Southampton at the moment than Ipswich losing. Yeah, and like you say about the playoff teams, like we beat Norwich home and away, if I'm not wrong. West Brom, we obviously drew at home, lost away, but they're in the worst form, so you can spin it in any way, can't you?
Yeah, I think we were slightly unlucky against West Brom at home. I think they had one shot, and we played pretty well actually. And that was right early in the season when we didn't really have the squad sorted yet. We should have had a
penalty as well, didn't we? I think from memory, or was it an off? Was their goal offside, something like that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it was just a referee. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, and then like we might, yeah, could end up playing Southampton again at Wembley. Hull kind of worry me a bit. I don't know why. Like, considering when we've got 4 points off them. I think we struggled in both games and they're in form. So they would actually be the team I'd want to play the least in the moment out of all the playoff teams, I think.
I've got a weird fancy for playing West Brom, but that's like a weird gut thing rather than...
A weird fantasy? Logic.
No, a weird fancy.
Oh, right. Okay.
I always fancy like, playing West Brom. Yeah. But that's like a weird gut thing. Like we've struggled with them, haven't we? But I just kind of feel like they're there to be taken right now. So that'd be my pick.
Yeah.
There's no science behind that.
Yeah. I think Norwich would be my preference. But we might not even make the playoffs. It doesn't matter. Martin, what about you on this?
So, yeah, I do agree that the current form that we're in, it isn't going to be good if I was against Southampton, even if they do rest some players, which I don't think necessarily will mean a whole lot. I still think that we're going to find it difficult with the current form that we've got, and unless we do show a really good reaction, it would need to be a very strong reaction. And yeah, we're going to struggle. And just touching on the playoff teams, I would like to play Hull personally. I'm hoping that they get in. I don't want to play West Brom again. We struggle against sides who can coach a good mid to low block. And that's what Carlos Corbrand can do. And he's done it to us twice. So I don't hope for us against that kind of setup. And although Hull did dominate us at Elland Road, we got the win and we created more big chances. So although they've got better individuals and they're probably a better football inside, I think that matchup suits us better. But at the moment, we just more than anything, we just need to beat Southampton. So even if Ipswich win their game against Coventry and then win their final game and win the playoffs, we still need to beat Southampton just so we can get our morale back in the squad. It will have taken a big hit against QPR. There's no way it hasn't, because they will have definitely feel like they've let the fans down in that one. And it's hard to say opposite to that, really. So yeah, it's a lot hinges on that Southampton game, whether no matter what Ipswich do.
I will say, though, if you go back to the Bielsa's first season, do you remember how we, obviously, we lost promotion, didn't we, against Wigan? I mean, not officially, but Wigan
it felt like
where
it.
We killed it. Yeah. And then I think we played Brentford away and we were just terrible. We got kicking at Brentford. And then we lost to Ipswich as well away in the run-up.
We lost
and
to Ipswich, yeah. There was the Villa game, wasn't it?
Somewhere in there. The Villa game was actually an okay performance to compete with them. But
something odd happened in that game.
Yeah, and the fans got really up for it. I remember I was at the game, the atmosphere was great. It was it was a really fun day out, the Villa game, I've got to say. And then the form basically wasn't good leading into the playoffs. Mm. And I know this might sound like a mental thing to say, but we played really well against Derby in the semi-final, both games, didn't we?
Well, for 135 minutes, we absolutely dominated them. And then it just went to hell.
Yeah, and like Liam Cooper and Kiko Casilla happened. And like the whole thing fell apart. But the point I'm making is form's fragile, you know, going one way, but bad form is fragile equally. So, you know, you can turn it around. We saw it against Borough in a good part of that game. We can play well again. So... Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be too doom laden about the playoffs if we end up in the playoffs. You know, it can turn around. You know, we got, you know, if it ends up being, we play away first, go away, get a draw, look solid, come back, play well at home. You know, it's not.
Yeah, we've lost what ones at home all year. If we have to just draw or win there, then you'd back us against anyone in any exactly. form in the league, wouldn't you? Really?
Yeah. So it's not all doom and gloom, you know.
Yeah. There you go. You know what? Winning at Wembley would be fun as well.
Absolutely.
Right. Finally, then. So we don't ask for predictions on this podcast, but I'm going to force you to do it anyway. So, Martin, what do the next few weeks look like for Leeds?
No, it's definitely not going to be fun. There's going to be a lot of nerves around the fan base. Ellen Road is going to be a very nervy place. Southampton on Saturday. For all the people who were clamouring to go and making things difficult for people to get tickets, it's maybe some people will be looking to sell their tickets, depending on what happens against Ipswich. But no, yeah, it could go either way. I do think that we do have the squad to be able to win in the playoffs, which sounds odd for a Leeds fan. But we do definitely have, of the teams who are in the playoffs, we do have the best squad in there. And if those individuals can perform on the day, they can beat anyone in the league. And these sort of two-leg fixtures, I think we also have a good squad for that as well. It's just all about if we can pick things up against Southampton, which I think hinges a lot of what the players will go through. If we do struggle again against Southampton and get hammered again, that would be obviously disastrous for the playoffs. And if that was the case, I wouldn't back us in playoffs at all. But if we did show a reaction, and even if we don't win against Southampton, if we have a good performance and put up a good fight, I think even that would do. We need to make sure we show a reaction and be a lot better than what we were in QPR. And that will buy me into thinking that we would have a really good chance in playoffs.
What's your prediction, Dan?
My prediction is Ipswich are going to draw tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're relying on Huddersfield to beat them.
Yep.
On Saturday, which of course will not happen because Huddersfield are absolutely utterly appalling at football. I think Leeds will probably play all right against Southampton. I think it might have been a draw, but I wonder if we'll have the similar kind of vibe that we saw against Leeds Villa in that BLC year. We'll see a bit of fight and it'll kind of wake the crowd up a bit. And we'll come away, even though we don't go up, we'll come away feeling fairly like okay about things. And then Leeds will beat Southampton in the playoff final. There you are. That's my prediction.
I like it. To be fair, I just thought of this now. We did all that analysis on like teams with 3 days back-to-back away games. What are Ipswich doing tomorrow? Who knows? So I think my prediction would be, we don't get automatics. I think we make the playoff final. I don't know. I'd like to say we win it, but it's a bit of a lottery on the day, isn't it? I'll say we lose just to end on a bombshell. I think that's more fun. but yeah. It's all going to be good fun. And we get to do more podcasts as well. So who wouldn't want to listen to us drone on for an hour twice a week for a few more weeks? Before we go then, so Martin, do you want to just do a quick reminder of the website for the Patreon?
It's patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
So that is all for tonight. We will be back. I think you guys are recording tomorrow where we're going to preview the Southampton game. But for now, I will say thank you to Martin.
Thank you as well, Taldo.
Thank you, Dan.
Cheers, Taldo.
And thank you, dear listeners, for listening. I hope you have a week as good as it can possibly be this week. But if not, it's not the end of the world. Don't worry. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.